Now, it's the last full week of the presidential campaign and we can expect a frenzy of debates, claims, counterclaims and press fleshing. For the first time in more than half a century, there will be just two candidates, Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys and independent Catherine Connolly. There will, of course, be a third name on the ballot paper. Despite his withdrawal from the election, people can, if they choose, vote for Fianna Fáil's Jim Gavin. This week on the News at One, we'll be talking to both candidates. Later in the week, we'll hear from Heather Humphreys. But today, I'm joined by Catherine Connolly. Good afternoon and thanks for being with us. Now, before we talk about the presidency, can I ask you about what we've just been hearing? Do you support this peace plan or do you have reservations about it?
Of course I support the peace plan, of course. And we've over 67,000 people, Palestinians, dead. And I'm sitting here listening. And one has to have hope, absolutely hope. And to make it phase one. This phase two and phase three, and it really will be determined by the oversight and who's carrying out that oversight, and so that we can have a lasting peace in relation to both sides.
Does Donald Trump deserve the Nobel Peace Prize?
I think that's way premature, and I'm really worried actually in relation to a lasting peace. But at the moment, I hold on to the hope that it will work out.
Now, as I was saying, there are only two candidates in this election, and we saw over the weekend that some in Fianna Fáil, including TDs, say that they'll still vote for Jim Gavin. So given the limited choice for people this time round, has the election been shorn of some of its credibility?
I don't think so. I think I've brought credibility, integrity and honesty to this campaign. I was first off the blocks. I'm out since July. The precise date I can't remember, but certainly the third week in July. I have engaged. I've gone from county to county, town to town. I've made myself available in four public forums. I've made myself chaired by four independent chair people, and I've made myself available. And I think I've given the people of Ireland choice.
You don't worry that they don't have enough choice this time, certainly compared to the last two or three elections?
At this stage, all of my energy, Rachel, and since July, has been focused on a campaign to say to the people of Ireland, you have a choice. Based on my record, based on what I stand for and the characteristics that you see in me and which they conveyed by email, by phone, by letter. And people have a choice now, and we've seen that Taoiseach of the country supporting Heather Humphreys. And I think, you know, the leadership in Fianna Fáil have made it clear that there's absolutely no difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. So they've made the decision easier for the electorate in that sense. I believe that a substantial membership of Fianna Fáil are not happy with that. And I would ask them to look to me as the candidate who will best represent them. And I've always stood as an inclusive candidate, and I think that's very important. I can't say it often enough. And I stood as an independent candidate without the backing of any party, without having the money for it. But I still felt with conviction that it was very important to stand up and use my voice and give the people a choice. And I've done that to the best of my ability
okay,
to date.
Just as you mention backing there, Alan Kelly, the former Labour Party leader, was on his local radio station this morning saying that he was voting for Heather Humphreys by default. Now, Brendan Howland told us on the News at One today that he would be supporting you. But have any of Labour's other former leaders offered you their backing?
I think that the Labour Party have played a blinder for me. Last night, Ivana Bacic was there with Maria Sherlock, and we were in the Mandate Union building.
You don't worry then that there's division there within Labour?
I have a lot to worry about, and actually worry is built into me, and it's one of the things I wish I wasn't such a worrier. But it's not about Labour. Labour are able to deal with their own worries. And last night, Ivana Bacic played a blinder, actually, and we were in the Mandate office. And there was overwhelming support for what I stand for. And it was just actually energising to be there and to get the support.
And did you get the backing then of any of the others who have led Labour in the recent past?
The Labour Party is led by Ivana Bacic. And she came out and gave backing, and they have been true to their word. They've been out canvassing for us every place on the ground, as have the other parties, the Social Democrats, People Before Profit, other people who are not members of parties and are part of my technical group, and the Green Party. And it's been, you know, this is momentous. It's actually historical that by me standing, that I've galvanised people from all sides to stand up, put aside their differences, stand together for the core values that this country holds dear.
Okay, and we can come back to those, but just to clear up something that arose during yesterday's debate in this studio. Since 1987, there have been 8 referendums on the EU, including 2 on the Nice Treaty and 2 on the Lisbon Treaty. Did you vote yes in any of them?
Well, you see, that question was framed afterwards at a press conference, I think, and I'd come straight from a debate. And I said I absolutely became very aware of what was happening with the Lisbon Treaty, and I absolutely canvassed against it for 2 reasons. One was the build up of the militarisation of Europe, and the second was the blatant neoliberal ideology. And then I reflected. So the first, when we joined the EEC, as it was called then, I wasn't old enough to vote.
But I think it was 1987 was what, the Single European
That's
Act?
Right.
Did you support that?
And I have to tell you that I awakened in Nice and really was fully awake in Lisbon. So I absolutely canvassed against the Lisbon Treaty.
And was that on both occasions?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And did you vote against Nice twice as
well? Absolutely. I've often said publicly, in a sense, that I felt ashamed is too strong a word. I wish I had awakened sooner, and I paid tribute to the people on the ground who woke sooner than I in relation to the militarisation of Europe.
So you've voted no on every occasion since Nice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just in relation to that, voting no in relation to a treaty is not a negative thing. It's indicating the concerns that I and lots of people had. And in fact, in voting no, we had to vote a second time on Nice and on Lisbon. And we were given absolute solemn promises in relation to our neutrality that seem to mean nothing at the moment, because we are now going down a road of saying that the triple lock is not a core part of our neutrality, and we have this double speak continuously.
Okay, and we can come back to that, but it is an issue that has been, you know, it has been out there a lot over the last few days. So I did want to ask you about a few other things as well. I mean, one issue that has come up over the course of this campaign is really people's belief that in good times and bad, the president is there to speak for us all. So the president's judgment is important. And given the controversy you've attracted over Syria, over Germany, over Hamas, can people trust your judgment?
You know, let's just go back to Hamas for a minute and then I'll come to my judgment. Netanyahu actually financed Hamas, amongst other groups, to split and divide. He actually is on record for saying, I financed lots and lots of money to Hamas.
Well, this is really about your judgment rather than about him.
No, I'm just coming because you've thrown in a lot of things. And I think that I have shown that I'm Ban Stuma Ingwelga, a woman who's strong, honest, and makes considered decisions and gives considered opinions. And I have been in the Dáil since 2016, prior to that 17 years as a city councillor. I have never missed a day in the Dáil up to recently. I think this week will be my first time. I have attended every day with the help of my staff. We've prepared for each topic that I've spoken on, and I have a record second to none for standing up, giving considered opinions. And then,
so there's no danger then that you'll say one thing and then have to clarify it a few hours later or the next day.
A lot of this has come from a Fine Gael campaign that's engendering fear, that's engendering a negative campaign. And we know exactly what Ivan Yates said. We know exactly.
Aren't there legitimate questions that people are entitled to ask during a campaign as well?
Everybody is entitled to ask questions, and I must be the only candidate that has stood repeatedly before people since July. I've said four open forums: Carrig-on-Shannon, Dundalk, Drogheda, Sligo. I have lost count of many press conferences, straight after a debate, straight down to a press conferences. I have done my best to answer every question. Perhaps the answers I give are not not
because
liked.
You have had to clarify a couple of things afterwards.
Everybody should clarify things. Everybody should be open. But however, if we go back to my record in the Dáil and prior to that and the various roles I've had, I've been a clinical psychologist, I've been a barrister, I taught for 3 years to the travelling community and many other jobs as a student. And then 17 years at City Council and then the Dáil since 2016, Leas Cian Chomhairle, the first female
You've set out your record, and I know at this stage people are familiar with it.
That's my judgment. That you asked me a question about my judgment. And so as Leas Cian Chomhairle, the first female woman ever elected, and I showed that I could chair a Dáil, listen to all sides, opinions that I didn't agree with, meet dignitaries, treat them with respect, absolutely shown what I did in that role.
And just on one thing that you did have to clarify, when you went to Syria in the summer of 2018, you met a supporter of Bashar al-Assad, something you now say was a mistake. Was it a mistake to go to Syria at all at that time?
No, actually. And prior to me ever going to Syria, I think the Taoiseach of this country went and met with Assad. I went to Syria on a fact-finding mission. I went absolutely with a group of activists who had been activists for a very long time. They went ahead and we joined them.
Who was it that invited you then and what was it that you needed to find out?
There was a group of community activists, Rita Fagan being one of them. She's allowed me to use her name. Maureen Sullivan was there as a TD. And we went over and the first place we went to do was the refugee camp outside of Damascus. And it was utterly destroyed. And I have said, I foolishly thought I was going to a camp with tents. It was a city where the Palestinian refugees were housed. And it was an absolute scene of hell, of destruction. I came back from that absolutely renewed in my horror of dictatorships, but my horror of war.
And that so did it change your views in some way? Because I know that same year I was reading through, there was a United Nations Commission of Inquiry, as I'm sure you know, when it issued a report just a couple of months before you went to Syria. And it said the government was punishing civilians through starvation and indiscriminate bombardment. And it said government forces had bombed schools and hospitals, that they'd used cluster munitions and chemical weapons. So really, was anything that could give succour to that regime a mistake?
No, I didn't give succour to the regime. Absolutely condemned the regime. No, I went and we visited and we listened to people and I came back with an absolute horror of war. I've always had a horror of war as I'm a pacifist. I'm a mother of two adult children now. And it was absolutely horrific, the destruction. And when we listened to the Palestinians, of course, they went back to the Nakba and they showed us the key of their house, which is the symbol for them up on their wall. And they appealed to us to do something in relation to that, in relation to the fact that there were refugees from their homeland since 1948. And they gave us details of that. I can't understand how anyone would think that is wrong. That deepened my understanding of what Palestinians have faced over and over, not just from 1948, but from way before that.
Can we move back to matters at home? You've said you want to be a president for all, but especially for those who are often excluded and silenced. Now, in your view, who are the people who were excluded and silenced?
Lots of people. As I travel around the country, I had someone come up to me and I just turned her away from the cameras in relation to violence against women, and she was out of her house and the perpetrator was still in the house. I've listened to carers. I've listened to a young man describe really in the most articulate manner that his brother was Down syndrome and how difficult that was and how they were fighting and fighting for services.
So is this really just about listening, or can you be more specific about what you would do for them?
I'm really doing my best. I think a president should listen, should hear and should reflect and then articulate what they are hearing. And going around the country, this huge engagement with me, absolutely all ages. Young people are coming up and older people saying, you give us a sense of hope. you speak openly and honestly and we can trust you. They don't expect me to sort out the problems. They realise that there's a big difference between being a president and policy and a TD and the Dáil. But what they want is a president that reflects their concerns on the ground in compliance with the constitution.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of that constitution and your ability to speak out, would you say choose to address the Oireachtas, something that's open to a president, albeit with government approval?
Absolutely. I will look at all those matters. And there's also an obligation on the Taoiseach to keep the president of the day informed, the Taoiseach of the day to keep the president informed. And I look forward to those engagements. And I think they will be a two-way process.
Even though everything that's been said by both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael about you over the past few weeks, is there a danger that if you were elected, it could be a very rocky relationship?
I have been a very measured politician. If you look at my record, I've been a very measured politician. I have always studied and read before I've spoken. And what's happening here in the last few weeks is a policy of fear, of diminishing the candidate. And I say, you're actually not just diminishing me, you're diminishing the role of the presidency, and you're also diminishing the people on the ground who are all actively canvassing for me, actively looking for hope. So that politics of fear, that politics of labelling is completely unacceptable. When you label someone, you other them, and it makes it very easy to diminish
them. So are they playing into your hands then?
They're giving a very strong message to the people on the ground. This is what will happen if you put your head above the parapet. If you dare to articulate as best you can your concerns, you will be labelled, you will be pushed aside, and you will be othered. And the politics of othering has got us into very serious trouble in this country and in the world of othering and reducing discourse and dialogue to them and us, and you're with us or you're not with us. Life is much more complex than that.
Just on a couple of other things, do you believe that people in the North should have a vote in presidential elections? And if you do, if elected, would you press the government to hold a referendum on this?
I certainly believe that the people in the North should have a vote, and in a recent motion in the Dáil, I fully supported that. That is a matter for governments. That's a policy matter. The Constitution in Article 3 clearly sets out the firm will of the Irish people to have united Ireland. And it goes on in the most articulate language to say that must be by consent and reflecting all sides. And the Good Friday Agreement is there. There was a cross-party committee that produced a report a year ago with very good recommendations showing the way forward and calling on the government to produce a green paper. Unfortunately, nothing has happened. What I'm saying is very important that the preparatory work is done. And that's, I would use my voice to, as previous presidents did, to cross the divide. And in fact, I met with Senator Frances Back lately, and she's part of a civic engagement group with two members with her from the North. And I was really impressed with the amount of meticulous and methodical work that's going on the ground across communities. And what jumped out for me was the emphasis on the similarities rather than the differences.
Actually, just as you mentioned some of those issues, would you like to see King Charles make a state visit here?
I think we'd welcome anyone. They're policy decisions for the government of the day. And as president, I will do my role as professionally as possible.
OK, just one final thing then. If elected, would you run for a second term?
I think one term will be enough for me. And I've said that. One term would be enough for me, I think.
There's no danger you'd do a Michael D. Higgins on it and change your mind.
I'll leave that to Michael D. Higgins. But I will do my best for the 7 years to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. It would be an absolute privilege for me to do that. And I would respect that privilege and do it to my utmost ability.
All right. Catherine Connolly, thank you for joining us this afternoon. And as I said at the start, we will be joined by Heather Humphreys later on in the week. Now, though, we're going to take a quick break.